the age-old argument is, my dad's better than your dad. You've heard that one. Well, three boys on a playground one day were bragging about their dads, and one of them said, my dad scribbles a few notes on a piece of paper, and they call it a song, and they pay him $50. Oh, yeah, my dad, he scribbles a few words, calls it a poem, and they pay him $100. That's nothing, said the third kid. My dad scribbles a few words, calls it a sermon, and it takes six people to collect all the money. Do you ever get frustrated with God? I'm not looking at Helen when I ask the next one. Do you ever get frustrated with your mate? Get frustrated with traffic slowdowns? Frustrated with your boss if you're still working? Or frustrated with your boss when you worked? That's why I retired. I just didn't like the person. So I had a choice. There are just some things in life that we get frustrated with. And if we get frustrated with those things, do we get frustrated with God when we know that God can do things in our lives and he just doesn't do it? So it makes me ask the question, God, do you really care? Are you a caring God about the things that go on in my life? The question I don't think is, does God care? But it's a hard question. It's a hard question for us to understand when we try to think that these big things in our lives are of such great concern, and maybe to God they're just minor little things that don't amount to nothing in his world. Let's look at a couple of Old Testament characters that might give, and I use the term characters, one of them is more of a character than the other, that might give us a little insight into that. The first one is Job. Job's story is all about human suffering. But it's also about the character of God. We all know and have read Job, and I've shared some message information on Job, but Job was considered to be an upright man. No more upright man lived in the time of Job than Job. He was faithful to God. He was faithful to his family. He was faithful to worship. He was faithful to his work. He was faithful to people around him. Sally's class this morning was on integrity. Job was a man with integrity. Why should something happen to Job? He endured tragedies, heartache, loss at the loss of all of his children, at the loss of all of his possessions, the loss of his home, children's homes, at the attitude of his wife, at the attitude of those three friends that came to visit him and offer him encouragement, if it was. If any one of those things that happened to Job happened in our lives, would we wonder if God really cared? If we lost everything, would we wonder if God really cares? God could have protected Job. He could have protected his wealth. He could have kept sores from coming all over his body. I don't think he could have changed his wife's attitude, because God created us as free moral agents. So she had a choice to do whatever she wanted to do and to whatever her attitude wanted to be. He could have rescued his children from the storms that come along. But it didn't happen. But as Andre Crouch in the song that he wrote, through it all, Job never complained. He never asked God, do you really care? I'm your servant Job. Does it make any difference to you about me? I'm down here. But this is what he actually said in Job chapter 10, verse 12. And I've got three different versions, but I think it's interesting that the way they're worded. The Amplified Bible says, "You have granted me life and loving kindness, and your providence or your divine care or supervision has persevered my spirit." The Common English Bible says, "Life and kindness you gave me, and you oversaw and preserved my breath." And the Message, which is about as literal as you can get, said, "You gave me life itself, an incredible love. You watched and guarded every breath I took." No matter what came in Job's life, he never complained, but he was always thankful that he still had life and he still had breath. Just think that's interesting. What Job said was that it was God's care that protected him. He understood that although he lost everything that he had, God cared enough to preserve his life. God cared enough to allow him to take that next breath and to never curse God. Although he lost everything, God kept care of him. But there's another character there that was a little bit different. Jonah. An upright man. Another upright man, really. But he refused to follow God's direction. He had every opportunity to do it, and we all know the story of Jonah, but just kind of a quick recap. God had told him to go to Nineveh to preach and speak to the people there. The people in Nineveh happened to be some of Israel's fiercest enemies. And Jonah didn't think that they deserved mercy. He didn't think that they deserved salvation. So rather than go to Nineveh, he gets in a boat and he's headed to Tarshish, which is the opposite direction from Nineveh. How many times do we think when we don't get what we want, we turn and go in the opposite direction? Some people just rebel, revolt, whatever. What he did is he endured a life-threatening boat ride, got thrown overboard, which is bad enough, then got swallowed by a whale, which is even worse. And then I love the next one. Get spewed or spit out of the whale with all the rest of the muck that was in the whale's stomach, and landed on land. Maybe the good thing was he may have landed on a beach, I don't know. But he finally decided it's time to go to Nineveh. Took a lot to get him there. But the great thing about when he goes to Nineveh is what he was supposed to do in the first place is he preaches to these people. They repent. God draws away from them the punishment that he was going to bestow upon him. And it becomes exactly the opposite thing that Jonah wanted for Nineveh. God cares for his people. And he cares precisely enough for him that he gave Jonah a second chance, and he gave Job life and breath. But Jonah knew, he knew God cares, but Jonah didn't care. He didn't care about the people in Nineveh. He risked his life to avoid doing what he should have done. And if he would have lost his life for what he should have done, then he would have been called a martyr. God's always compassionate. God's always mindful of us as people. Sometimes I think we think that he forgets, but as the psalmist said, has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercy? I think the answer to those questions is no. Was God angry with me? Did he forget I asked him something? Was he ministering to someone else? Or was I too low on the totem pole? I've often said when the boys were at home and we had two German shepherds, there was the boys, And they were on the top of the totem pole, and it varied which day, who was above the other one. The same way with the dogs, Baron and Cheyenne, you know, who was above. But I always was at the bottom of the totem pole, and I was able to sit down there and brush the dirt around and clip the grass around the bottom of the totem pole, because that's where I was. But did that make me any less? No. It was just that it wasn't my time to move up. I moved up a space, two spaces, when the two dogs died. I have moved down now that we got another dog. And not that I want to equate myself with Job, but I kind of knew what my place was. And I think Job did the same thing. And Jonah knew what he was supposed to do all along. He just didn't do it. So does God care? I think he does. But what happens if he cares and nothing happens to us? Is God capable of making a change? Is God capable of doing something in our lives? But does he have the power to change things? Can he do something different? Jeremiah was an Old Testament prophet, and he lived during some turbulent times. He saw the destruction of the temple, one of the things that just hurt him severely. He prayed, he wept, he begged people to change, but they just wouldn't. Jeremiah, and I'm going to read chapter 8, I'm going to read the first 8 verses of it. He says, "At that time, declares the Lord, the bones of the kings of Judah and its officers, the bones of the priests and the prophets, and the bones of the people of Jerusalem will be taken from their graves and exposed to the sun, the moon, and the whole heavenly forces, which they have loved and served, and which they have followed, consulted, and worshipped. Their bones won't be gathered for reburial, but they will become like refuse lying on the ground. The survivors of this evil nation will prefer death to life. However, I've scattered them, declares the Lord of the heavenly hosts. Say to them, the Lord proclaims, when people fall down, they don't get up. When they turn aside, don't they turn back? Why does this people, rebellious Jerusalem, persistently turn away from me? They cling to deceit and refuse to return. I have listened carefully, but haven't heard a word of truth from them. No one regrets their wrongdoing. No one says, what have I done? Everyone turns to their own course, like a stallion dashing into the thick of battle. Even the stork in the sky knows the seasons, and the dove, the swallow, and the crane return in due time. But my people don't know the Lord's ways." That's pretty tough stuff when you hear that. So he says in verse 8, "How can you say we are wise, we possess the Lord's instructions, when the lying pen of the scribes has surely distorted it?" These are pretty harsh words that God is saying. And when he says that he's going to raise the bones and not rebury them, but they're just going to be refuge for people to see, I believe God cares. I believe God is compassionate. We know he cares, because of the way he takes care of us. But when he doesn't take care of what we want at that time, does that mean that he's just not interested in us at that point? Sometimes God chooses not to act to allow us to come to our senses, to realize what's important, to realize where we need to be in our relationship with him. Maybe come to our God senses. Suffering doesn't make us need God. What it does is exposes the fact that we'll always need God and that we'll always need him. God uses restraint also to show us his compassion, and sometimes that's hard for us to believe, but he does that to draw us closer to him. He wants to show us compassion, but sometimes it's not always on our timetable. And so what would happen if we got everything that God heard us ask for? What would that be like? Well, someone said If we are disheartened by our circumstances, we would most likely be disheartened by any change. How many times do we hear people win millions of dollars in the lottery and lose it? Wasted away. I remember the first, $300 million winner, I think it was out in maybe Virginia or West Virginia, somewhere out there. Some guy got it, he was on TV, and he ended up just blowing it. I think he was a minister, if I remember correctly. Or he claimed to be. I'm not sure. But we need to embrace this idea of compassion. But there's three different things here, and I want to share these as soon as I say this. But the principle here is, and the psalmist said it really well, I call you to deliver. That's pretty much what the psalmist was saying when he said in chapter 71, verse 2, in your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Or in 25:29, oh, guard my soul and deliver me. God said if he does care and if he has the power to protect us and deliver us, he will. But the question is, why doesn't he? Well, I think he does. And here's three situations I want you to take a look at. Three different kinds of deliverance. Hezekiah, we read in chapter 58 that Hezekiah was delivered from his sickbed. He was sick and God healed him. God also delivered the three Hebrew children from the fiery furnace. Except he didn't just deliver them, he got in there with them. So you can be delivered from something, you can be delivered through something, or like Stephen, you can be delivered out of something. And sometimes that's the hard one. Because we see people suffer as Christians. And they're delivered out of that suffering. And we ask the question, why God didn't you heal them? I remember listening to Zig Ziglar. And I think I may have shared this before, I don't know. But if I did, I'll share it again because it's a good point. But he was praying about his daughter who had multiple sclerosis, I believe it was, and she died, and said something to the effect that in his prayer that he would love to have her back. And the prayer answer came back and said, no. Not where she's at. She wouldn't want to come back. And that's someone that was delivered out of something. God will deliver you. God will deliver me. And ultimately, he's going to carry us to the place where we are never, ever going to need deliverance. But whether it's from, through, or out, God is our deliverer. So in conclusion, is grace enough? 2 Corinthians 8:9 says, for you are recognizing the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, his astonishing kindness, his generosity, his gracious favor, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich or abundantly blessed. We see favor, we see generosity, we see loving kindness from God. And that just forms a picture of what really communicates his grace to us. Through grace we experience the compassion of God. Because of this we are not overwhelmed by our problems. And sometimes we think our problems are more than we can deal with. But they're not. I sat in, I visited people in the hospital, saw Denzel in the hospital, and I think just paraphrase what Helen says was, he never complains. He never did to me. And she's been around him a lot longer than I have. But she said he never complains about anything. What a witness that we can have some gray hair on our head and say, no one ever complained. And when I talk to people and said, how are you doing? And I keep wishing I wouldn't do that. Yeah. And I ask everybody coming today, how are you doing? But I love Ruth's response. How are you doing? It doesn't get any better than that. That is what grace is. And so as you celebrate life this week, share grace with someone. And they'll know that, yes, God does answer prayer because of that grace that you showed in their life.